Welcome to the Promises of the Constitution podcast.
Hello, this is Pamela Romney Openshaw, here today to talk to you about our founding Christian documents. So in our last podcast, we established the fact that our founders were Christian, which is very important because they brought their beliefs into our governing system. Christianity is absolutely essential to secure our inalienable rights. And I think by the time we get to the end of this podcast, you're going to really understand that. Let's realize that law is an expression of society's values and morals. The things that we value, we protect. We make sure that no one is going to take them away from us. And so our rights are very important to us, but they depend on having an unchanging set of morals and an unchanging law that will protect those morals. When you have subjective law, when it's changeable, our morals, our values, our principles, our rights, they all change. They all can be taken away from us over time. So we ask ourselves the question, what would life be like if we were to lose our protected rights? And we're watching that happen in the United States of America today, as we're seeing our religious rights slowly being taken away from us by laws and by the pressures of society and by regulations and such. And that's a very serious matter in our culture. So let's answer the question, do America's founding documents acknowledge God? Well, we have four founding documents. Let's go through them one at a time. The first is the Declaration of Independence, and it very clearly states that our basis is founded in God, that our authority is founded in God. It states that the laws of nature and nature's God are our governing force. It states that all men are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. It states that we are appealing to the supreme judge of the world. How about the Articles of Confederation, our defunct practice run at government? We didn't get it right, but we learned what we should do the next time, and we got it right the second time. But the Articles of Confederation are also Christian in their orientation by this statement. And whereas it hath pleased the great governor of the world to incline the hearts of the legislatures we respectfully represent. So now how about the Northwest Ordinance? It was drafted in 1787. During the time the Constitutional Convention was going on, we were acquiring this massive amount of territory that became five of our states. And so the document, the Northwest Ordinance, is really one of our founding documents, and this is what it states. It's talking about education, educating the young, and it says, "Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind," then goes on to talk about that education, giving you the very clear impression that religion, morality, and knowledge are supposed to be part of our educational system. But now we come to the premier document that we study, and that's the Constitution of the United States. And it specifically states in several different places that it is a religiously oriented document. The only place the Constitution actually uses the name of God is at the very conclusion, when it states, "in the year of our Lord." Now, that is a statement of religious orientation, but there are some in the Constitution that are much stronger than that. We find in both the preamble and in Article 3, where we're talking about the judicial system, this phrase, "we do ordain this Constitution." What does the word ordain mean? Well, if you go to Webster's 1828 dictionary, you get a good idea of what the founders meant when they used certain words. And in the Webster's 1828 dictionary, we find that this word ordain means it's referring to something that is set up by ministerial or priestly or priesthood authority. This is a very religious term. Also, we find that the executive veto process exempts Sunday. In a legal document, a statement like this is enshrining a particular principle. So we find that the Sabbath becomes part of the document itself by setting aside that time from the veto process, saying this day of the week is something special. This is the day that God prevails. How about Article 6, which of course states that no religious test is to be allowed, and then of course we have the First Amendment, and it's freedom of religion. But I think we can go further than that when we talk about the Christian base of the Constitution. A couple of weeks ago, I was thinking about this, and I thought, you know, I'll bet if I went through the Constitution, every clause of the Constitution, every tiny little segment, I bet I could find a Christian principle at the basis of that particular part of the Constitution. So I started with a working list that I created of Christian principles. And as I tell you this list, you'll begin to see, oh, right, we must have Christian principles at the basis of our system of law, because we don't want to forfeit all of these beautiful principles. This is my working list. Of course, first of all, that the document, if it's going to be Christian, it has to be founded on God, and that's what we've been talking about in these podcasts. But agency and accountability are Christian principles. Equity or equality and fairness are principles. Justice and mercy, safety and security, work and self-reliance, the need of the individual to provide for himself, integrity and honesty, order and organization, peace and prosperity. Those are all Christian principles. How would we want to have a system of government that didn't employ those principles? So let's look first of all, we're going to take a look at each one of those, and I'm going to give you just one or a couple of examples from the Constitution about each of those principles, but know that what I'm giving you is just a tiny little sampling of what can be found in the Constitution. Let's look, first of all, and we'll spend more time with agency and accountability because they are so premier in this. So agency, then, is the power we find reflected in the power to choose government, and the Declaration of Independence states that. Governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. So while the Declaration declared that we would become an independent nation, it was the Constitution that decided what kind of government we would have as an independent nation. And as the founders contemplated this, they had three major forms of government set before them that they could incorporate in the Constitution. The first is a monarchy, which is ruled by one. The second is an oligarchy, which is ruled by an elite few. And the third is democracy, which is ruled by all. There is a fourth system. We don't want anything to do with that. That is tyranny producing oppression and chaos. So what system of government did the founders choose? They chose all three of those systems. They brought the monarchy into the Constitution through the executive. They brought the oligarchy in through the Senate. And they brought democracy in through the House of Representatives. And they prevented tyranny with a judicial system. So remember, of course, that we're not a democracy. No, we're not a democracy, because the minority does have a voice in America. So we see how agency operated, the Christian principle. Now let's take a look at accountability. What is accountability? It means accepting responsibility, requiring responsibility. And we do that by delegating authority to control power. Power is so potent. Again, that statement by Lord Acton of Great Britain, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so that's what government is about, is controlling power. That is accountability, requiring responsibility among the people. And so we do that with the division of powers. Horizontally, we give power to the legislature, to the executive branch, and to the judiciary. And then we divide power further vertically by beginning with the home and the family as the basic level, and then your city or town, and then the county, and then the state, and then the federal government, progressing up that chain, each step up that chain receiving fewer and fewer powers. So we have required accountability by balancing power against power through a system of checks and balances. Now the next principle, equity or equality and fairness. Just one example, and that is that all states are required under the Constitution to be treated equally. We cannot favor one state over another. We must treat all states and therefore all people equally. How about justice and mercy? That's so easily demonstrated through the principle of impeachment in the Constitution. We see justice come into the impeachment process by the elected representatives, those we sent to government, those elected representatives from both houses of Congress needing to participate and agree in this process of impeachment. But we see mercy enter in the fact that only the office can be stripped from the individual and the opportunity to serve in office in the future. You can't go after a man's family. You can't go after his private property. You can't take his life away from him through assassination. This is the balance of justice and mercy in the Constitution. Just one example. So how about safety and security? It's an absolute right that you have as an individual to keep yourself safe and to keep yourself secure. And no system of government that protects individuals, that's viable, is going to take away from them their right to protect themselves. Yes, we have a police force. Yes, we have a military. We've designated responsibility to them to step in under certain circumstances. But we must, as individuals, have the right to protect ourselves. And we find that, of course, in the Second Amendment, because a well-regulated state militia is necessary for the security of a free people. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And just as a sideline, let me mention that we need to have not only the right to own guns to protect ourselves, but we also need to have the right to procure the ammunition that the guns would need in order to keep us safe. Let's take a look at work and self-reliance. The Constitution, any document, any legal document, any system of government communicates part of its authority and part of its principles by what it does not say. It's not just what it does say, it's what it does not say. If it does not authorize government to do a specific thing, then government cannot do that thing. And so work and self-reliance, we don't find those in the Constitution, that everybody's required to do that. What we find instead is that no authority is given to government for subsidies, for entitlements. Citizens are required to provide for themselves. How about integrity and honesty? We find that in the provision that no office holder can accept a title, an office, or an emolument, in other words, a bribe, from a foreign entity, and just as an aside, not from a national entity either. Order and organization. This is one of my favorite principles of the Constitution, one of my favorite Christian principles. God is a God of order, and all things that God would create would have order and organization. And so the founders brought that into the Constitution through the 10th Amendment, very securely through the 10th Amendment. So let's talk about the Bill of Rights for just a minute. As the Constitution was being completed and it was the final draft was presented, three of the founders stepped forward and said, wait a minute, we can't sign this document because it doesn't properly protect individual rights. And all of the rest of them were going, why didn't you say so sooner? And so these three individuals did not sign the Constitution. And as the document went to the states for ratification, to the individual 13 colonies, this became a real issue. The rights were not properly protected, and so some of the states ratified the Constitution only on the condition that a Bill of Rights would be added in the first Congress. And indeed it was. That Bill of Rights was then ratified throughout the 13 colonies and became part of the Constitution. It's that 10th Amendment that is so precious when it comes to this concept of order and organization, because it states that any undesignated power, anything not mentioned in the Constitution, meaning anything new, anything that was going to come up in the future, anything that was confusing, the power to resolve that issue would go to the people and to the states. What a beautiful principle this is. Our founders not only provided a system of government that was the very best that they could give, but then they brought into play a principle to take care of anything that came up in the future. Notice that no authority is given to the federal government to resolve those issues in the future. The power goes to the people and to the states. And finally, the last of the Christian principles that I'll mention is peace and prosperity. And we designate that so clearly in the preamble, which is really our mission statement, when we state that domestic tranquility and promoting the general welfare are our goals and our objectives with the Constitution. So I think you can see from our discussion how important these Christian principles are to protecting us as a people. I don't think any of us would want to live without the protection of those principles. It's easy to see why progressives, those who are trying to destroy our system of government or to change it and turn it into something else, view our morals as their biggest problem, because a people that are solidly anchored in Christian principles are very hard to mislead. Our court system is systematically replacing our Christian basis with amoral doctrines, with eliminating religion from the Constitution in any way or form. Their objective is to require our moral approval and punish those who will not give that moral approval. This is very, very serious, and I think that if you are listening to this podcast, you are doing so because of the concern that you feel, and I hope that you will share these podcasts with other people that you know are concerned as well. Spread this message through your circle of influence so that we can have more people who understand what law is, who understand that law is a reflection of our values, and that that law must be protected. I've given you additional information on this topic in my materials in my book, Promises of the Constitution. Section 12 deals with secular humanism. You'll understand that much more clearly. Section 13 deals with some additional information about these moral principles we've been talking about. And Section 14 shows us what the United States of America will be like when we return to our Christian basis and restore our original Constitution. Let me conclude by giving you one statement. I love this statement. It's by Benjamin Rush, one of the greatest of our founding fathers, when he said that the Constitution is as much a work of divine providence as the miracles of the Old and New Testaments. Isn't that wonderful? Thank you so much. Join us again next week.
To have Pamela speak to your civic or church group, please call 801-373-0240 or email openshawenterprises@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to the Promises of the Constitution podcast. Be sure to go to Pam's website, promisesoftheconstitution.com, to purchase her books, DVDs, and her online educational courses available to watch on any electronic device.